You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, episode number 59, 50 Shades of Pre-Specification. Welcome to the Effective Statistician with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, the weekly podcast for statisticians in the health sector designed to improve your leadership skills, widen your business acumen, and enhance your efficiency. And regarding leadership skills, I'm really, really pleased that we have an upcoming webinar about the mastering the art and the science of influential communication for statisticians. And it would be awesome if you would sign up for that and tell your colleagues about it. You can find all what you need to know about this webinar at theeffectivestatistician.com webinar. And in this webinar, you'll learn more about challenges around communications, how to overcome them, being more influential, and especially also how you can cope with a challenging audience. What is important about a strong start and a strong finish of a communication, and three things that you can do right now to improve your communication. So don't miss this opportunity. Enroll for the webinar. It's completely for free, and you'll be much more effective afterwards if you implement what you will learn in this webinar. And I'm pretty sure it will also reduce lots of frustrations. So today in the episode, we will talk about a topic that is very close to my heart. It's pre-specification. And Lovisa, the person that I'm interviewing today, and myself, we are working on this now for some time, and we figured that it's not as black and white as it usually sounds. And we will dissect in this podcast exactly what are the different dimensions you need to take care of in order to better understand how pre-specified or how post hoc and how valid your analysis are. This podcast is created in association with PSI, a global membership organization dedicated to leading and promoting best practice and industry initiatives. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the special interest groups, the video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. And you get that for only £20 if you're coming from a non-high income country, and only £95 for high income countries. So just go to psiweb.org and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician, and this time it's again with Lovisa, as we were already speaking and about a different topic last year, approximately actually the same time, and this time is also something that Lovisa will present about on the Wednesday morning of the PSI conference. Hi Lovisa, how are you doing?
Hi, Alexander. Many thanks for having me. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Very, very good. Okay, so today our topic is pre-specification. And we have a very, very nice title, which is about the 50 shades of pre-specification, scientific considerations in post-hoc analysis of clinical trials in HTA. So HTA in terms of health technology assessments, the things that you do if you want to get reimbursement and price negotiations with the different countries all over the world. HTA is actually a bigger concept, but what we are talking here about is exactly that. So why is that actually a problem? Isn't pre-specified completely clear?
Yeah, I mean, at the first glance, you might think it is. Because you have your clinical study, and in this clinical study, you have your protocol, you have your SAP, you have your programming specification, and this is all finalized before unblinding. And then database lock happens, we analyze our report and report the data, everyone is happy, perfectly clear, pre-specified analysis. And this is, of course, the gold standard, and we... our definition of pre-specified is analysis specified detailed enough for independent duplication of results finalized prior to unblinding.
Yeah, so it's really kind of, it's detailed and it's prior to unblinding, and it can be replicated if you just take the same specifications. So that's the great gold standard. Now, what's post hoc?
Exactly. And then post hoc, not surprisingly, would then be analyses that are not fully specified before unblinding. And if you ask a physician what post hoc analyses are, they will, of course, immediately think about, for example, subgroup analyses. But I want to point out that not all subgroup analyses are post hoc, and not all post hoc analyses are subgroup analyses. So even though this, of course, and you will hear me talk about that more later, but subgroup analysis is a big topic here, but there are also other post hoc analyses.
Yeah, and so on a first glance, it really looks like pre-specified is a gold standard. That's kind of the white part. And post hoc is always bad and the kind of dark side of it.
Yeah, and I mean, if it was that easy, we wouldn't be having this discussion today. Because, you know, life is never that black and white, is it? So where it starts to get a little bit more messy is when you look into things like HTA, but also unexpected findings in the study. We have all been through those studies where you at database log go like, oh, that's interesting. And hopefully this, oh, that interesting is covered by your statistical analyze plan, but it might not be. And then, of course, you might need post hoc analysis to explore and understand the impact of this better. Or there might be a regulatory request, you know, the regulatory authorities and the HTA authorities don't always agree that what we think is the most important analysis of a study actually is the most important analysis of the study. So you can't just keep it black and white. And this is exactly what I'm going to talk about today.
Yeah, and I think also kind of the level of detail is, of course, can vary a lot. You know, you can have completely kind of everything laid out so that you maybe even have the code already written and that is completely pre-specified. Or you may just say, we want to analyze this endpoint by that method, but not be, you know, more clear about how you define the subgroup or how you analyze the subgroup in terms of dichotomizing it or these kind of things.
Exactly. And, you know, and to understand this better, we need to understand why we need post hoc analysis. And as you mentioned in the beginning, since we today are talking mainly within the HTA setting, I'm going to focus on that. And there are basically three main drivers for post hoc analysis within HTA. The first one is the difference, so that the evidence-based medicine background of HTA, which is different from regulatory. So already sort of in their underlying philosophy between regulatory and HTA, there are differences. And these differences can then lead to post hoc analysis. And it's a little bit the same as the difference between confirmatory setting and real-world needs. The next point is that the HTA world is consistently changing. You know, when we start our big phase 3 program, we just know how the market looked there, look at that point, and we know as well that we have competitors that are trying to get their products out on the market. But new registrations of medicines, changes in guidelines, political changes, all of these will impact the analysis needed. And these are very hard to predict during study design because it's a changing environment.
Yeah, so it could be, for example, that when you actually design your study, you're thinking about a specific patient population. And that is, and also the HTA buddy maybe at that point might think we are interested in this specific patient population. And then new treatments become available and they say, oh, no, this part of the population is covered by that treatment. So we want to know whether how your treatment works in all the other patients. And these kind of changes can lead to these kind of post-hoc analysis that you can't actually predict during the study design.
Absolutely. And to add even more complexity to this, you know, we talk about HTA, but it's not just one HTA body. It's multiple countries. And each of these countries will have their differences in law, cultures, markets, everything. And even though there are initiatives ongoing, there is at the moment no centralized procedure, which means that all these considerations that we have already mentioned is not only needed once for HTA, it's needed for every single country.
Yeah. And if you think that only in Europe we have more than 20 countries, that already amounts to lots of differences.
So as you can see, to foresee all of this and to correctly and detailed specify this in your SAP prior to database lock might be a bit tricky.
Yeah, especially tricky for the protocol. Yeah.
Yes. And yes, to give a few examples, because we said in the beginning that, you know, you pre-specified your analyses, you lock the database, you conduct them, you report them. I want to sort of give a few examples where the gray zone is not only for pure post-hoc analysis, but even the gold standard has a few shades of gray in it.
Yeah.
So, for example, you have your study protocol, and in your study protocol, you have said that subgroup analysis will be conducted based on age for the primary endpoint. Now, this is brilliant. It's pre-specified because it's in your protocol. And the endpoint is well-defined, even if it wasn't in my statement. It's the primary endpoint of the study, so
That should be well-defined somewhere else in the protocol, yeah.
Yes. However, there are a few clouds on the sky here. For example, is age continuous or categorical? And if categorical, what cutoffs? You know, that's not mentioned here. And it also doesn't consider the statistical methods. Subgroup analysis can, of course, be done in different ways. Is this a simple split between the two subgroups? Age criteria met, yes, no? Or should this be included as a parameter in your regression model? And then, of course, if we start to do a lot of these subgroups, how do we consider multiplicity?
Yeah.
And another example of where we have a post-hoc analyze that where people would normally say that this might be bad, this is maybe not so scientifical, there is also shades in this. So, for example, take the HTA request to show consistency of results across subgroups defined by country reimbursement guideline versus overall study on primary endpoint. So this is, since it's an HTA request, it's not pre-specified. However, it's also not data-driven. It's not the sponsor who has set the criteria for the country reimbursement. And it's also, once again, as we mentioned in the previous, the primary endpoint of the study should be well defined, but then it lacks information on the statistical method.
Yeah.
So there are some good points here and some bad points, exactly like we saw in the clinical trial protocol example.
And classically, you would very often say, well, the one example with the study protocol, that's pre-specified. Although it actually has some kind of limitations, whereas the HTA request, that's post-hoc, although it has actually some, advantages in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not kind of this, we run kind of 1,000 analysis and then we present those that, you know, fit our needs, fit our wants, so to say. And so there should be some kind of differentiation between these different shades of gray in terms of post hoc and, or completely post hoc, so to say, on one hand, and highly pre-specified, where, you know, every detail is nicely laid out. There should be some kind of separation between these kind of things.
Exactly, because I think all of you, after me giving you these two examples, I think all of you can agree that these two examples are slowly starting to approach each other in terms of scientific rigor.
Yeah.
Because they are, you know, there are advantages and or pros and cons with both of them. There are parts that are well specified and others that are not. So if we can't divide the world into black and white, you know, then having a grading system would of course make sense.
Yeah, I think it's really important to kind of come up with a system for how we can clearly and consistently across kind of different publications, reports, and so on, describe how pre-specified or how post hoc these analyses are, so that it's clear to the reader what was actually pre-specified here and what parts are actually post hoc.
Yeah, this is very important, and I work on a lot of publications, and I'm actually quite proud that I make sure that I always have a sentence in there that says these analyses were post hoc, or these analyses were part of the pre-specified analyses in the study. And I thought already that was going quite far. But that is not covering these shades of grey, so to say. That's once again using the black and white definition that I hope after today you will try and avoid.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this would help to come out of these discussions whether something is pre-specified or not. Yeah, because I remember a couple of discussions within a company where we were looking into some analysis and we were discussing, is that now pre-specified? Because partly it's mentioned,
yeah.
Or is that not pre-specified? Because actually there were so many pieces in the analysis that, you know, you could come up with lots of different ideas. Yeah. So in terms of our original definition, you know, this highly pre-specified, it basically means that, you know, anybody that reads that and programs it comes up with the same results. But
yeah, and going back to your own study your own study specifications, I think we can all agree that that's quite hard to achieve even in the best of circumstances.
Yeah.
So what I want to propose instead, and what I find much more informative, is to break it down to what are the important compounds of finding this scientific rigor in a pre-specified versus post-hoc analysis. And
we have five of them.
Exactly. So the first one is the detail, the level of details in the specifications. The second one is the rationale for analysis and methods. The third one is timing of writing the specifications. The fourth one is transparency of result presentation. And the fifth one is degree of alpha control.
Yeah. So let's dive into each of these five kind of dimensions that drive how pre-specified an analysis is. So first, in terms of the detail of specifications, what are the kind of things that we need to look into there?
So for those of you who listened to the previous episode with me, you know I really like the estimates, and that's coming back here because we need to see how well specified our study outcome is or our estimate is. So we have the population, the variable, the population level summary, and the intercurrent event. And these are four pillars, and these four all need to be well specified in order for us to say that it's fully specified. But this is not enough to just have your estimate. You also need to be clear on your statistical method of estimating your outcome. So your statistical method needs to be well specified, including sensitivity analysis.
Yeah. Okay, very good. So that's number one. The second one is the rational one for the analysis and methods. And I think that's a very, very interesting one because you can come up with lots of different rationals. I think that is very often wasn't considered as being important. And I think the example where the analysis are required by HDA body based on a guideline, which of course is kind of, you know, a pre-specified document in itself, is an important thing to have a look into.
Absolutely. So here you sort of have different grades of what rationale or how well you have argued for your rationale of conducting the analysis. Of course, we have that they are included in the study objective, and then they are covered by the rationale for conducting the study in the first place. But as you mentioned, having a regulatory authority or an HDA body coming up with a specific request is, of course, also a very high level of transparency in why you are conducting the analysis. While on the other extreme, we can look at things like purely data-driven decisions, where you sit down with a group of physicians and play around with the data and sort of looks at what looks good, and then you conduct an analysis based on that. And I think it's clear to all of us that the rationale really counts for pre-specifications when you look at it from that perspective.
Yeah. Okay, number three is timing of writing the specification. Well, that's pretty clear, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is what we typically consider when we talk about post hoc versus pre-specified. And that needs to be in here, of course.
Yeah.
And I think there are a few things here to mention as well, that this is not just a pre-specified versus before or after the database lock question. This is also about if we have done it before database lock, it becomes a question about where is this documented?
Yeah.
Because you can't just say that, oh, well, I discussed this with a few physicians prior to database lock, so therefore...
It's pre-specified.
Exactly. And it's also not good to just have it written in an email sitting on a server somewhere. But, of course, what is good is if it's... The best scenario is if it's in the protocol, which is then published on clinicaltrial.gov or similar.
Yeah.
But then, of course, if you have a dated and signed document, that's much better than having just your typical email. Yeah. And this is also an important thing to discuss during your phase 3 planning program, because we have our normal set. And this one needs to be finalized before database lock, and it has, at least in most companies, a lot of procedures connected to it, how, when, and where to finalize it. So it might be worth having a separate HTA set to cover the need of flexibility that is in HTA. But then it's important to address this, that is it possible to maybe lock parts of the set?
Yeah.
Prior to database lock and document that somehow, rather than just having one living document that never really gets finalized. So there is more complexity to this than just is it specified prior to database lock, yes or no.
One thing that I was always kind of feeling a little bit weird about is these kind of to prove that it was really specified is pretty easy if you're a regulator, because you have the authority to look into all the documentation, to audit stuff and all these kind of things. some HDA bodies also request much more kind of documentation on that. And then, of course, for them, it's also pretty transparent. But if you're, you know, just a usual scientist, it's the only thing that you can really see that it's specified up front is things like clinicaltrials.gov, you know, where everything is publicly available before database lock, and where there's really a system in place that gives transparency to everybody. And I think that it leads us to the next dimension, which is about transparency.
Yes, exactly, because, you know, if you take an extreme example, you could specify in your SEP that we will conduct these 500 subgroup analyses, and then when you have done that, you just cherry-pick the two which happen to be have a significant p-value. I think we have all had those discussions with physicians at one point or another that that is not good statistical practice. Nevertheless, this is also part of how scientific your analyses actually are in the end, or your results are in the end. So it's important to ask yourself the question, are all the results from conducted analyses included? Because if you specify the analyses, conduct them, and report all of them, you have full transparency.
Yeah.
However, the second that you start to include just a few of the analyses, even if you're not cherry picking, but the second that you start to pick out analyses, you have to be clear with why you have picked them out, and also preferably to somehow reflect the results that you haven't included.
Mm.
To, for example, say that they were consistent with the other subgroup analyses requested, or that there were no signals seen in other subgroups, or something, first of all, indicating that there are more analyses that is not included, and also giving the recipient a sort of feeling for what is it we are hiding.
Yeah. Okay, and then we come to the last dimension, the alpha control. That's also a pretty straightforward one.
Yeah, this is very straightforward. This is basically asking or being transparent with if this is controlled for multiplicity,
yes or no.
And this is not necessarily us saying that you should always control for multiplicity, especially in an HTA setting. This almost becomes a philosophic question, but it's more about clearly stating when you have done it or when you haven't.
Yeah, and I think that's a kind of nice thing to separate specified analysis that are under the primary umbrella of the study, or maybe, you know, even if you have integrated analysis and these are pre-specified, and you have agreed on some multiplicity adjustment, maybe on these integrated analysis could also be the case. So I think that it's not to say that all analysis needs to be pre-specified, all pre-specified analysis needs to be alpha controlled. It's just an additional kind of description of the analysis, and to come up really with a comprehensive comprehensive approach to that. So what do you think are actually then, based on all these discussions, best practices to follow for HTA submissions?
So just very shortly to summarize it, I think to increase transparency of the results in an HTA, we need to try and pre-specify elements such as methods or subgroups as early as possible. And we clearly need to disclose the level and detail of the specifications, as well as state the rationale for conducting these analyses. And it's also very important to be clear and transparent when you present your results, including both a statement if this is all results, and if not, give the recipient a feeling for what is not included. And then, of course, also include a sentence on alpha level control.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be, you know, describing that more comprehensively would be a much better way of describing these pre-specifications than, you know, what we discussed at the beginning, just writing in your paper, these analyses were post hoc or these analyses were pre-specified, and speak about these different dimensions, how pre-specified they are. And that gives the reader or the listener in the presentation a much, or the HDA body, a much better kind of feeling for the scientific rigor and where in this gray zone between being completely highly pre-specified and being completely data-driven and post-hoc, where in this gray zone it actually sits.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good summary of this. And if there's something I want you to take away from this podcast today, it is that we have to step away from just saying pre-specified or post-hoc, and we have to acknowledge that there is a gray zone in between. And I see it as a very important task for the statistician to communicate to the teams and make sure that there is a transparency on this, and that we assign the statistical or the scientific rigor to the analysis in the way it should be done. Yeah. So we can't just say that just because it happens to be specified after database lock, it's bad, or prior to database lock, it's good. It's actually our job to make sure that the physician sees these shades of grey and not only black and white.
Yeah. And both Lovisa and myself will be at the PSI conference. So please join us there in the Wednesday morning session.
Yes.
And it would be awesome to have some discussion about this topic and to learn from your viewpoint here and how you see that, how what your experience with that is. And please come to London early June, and then we can have a great discussion about that. Thanks, Lovisa, so much for coming today. And really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
This show was created in association with PSI. And next week, we'll talk about subgroup analysis, or more specifically, subgroup identification tools. Quite nice episode. You'll love it. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to register for the webinar and tell your colleagues about it. It will be pretty awesome, because I know Gary is an awesome speaker, and we are working together on that, and it will be quite interesting. We have done lots of things about communication in the past together, and I'm sure you'll get lots of value from it. And remember, it's for free.